Welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. So today we are joined by a negotiation instructor and coach at the Black Swan Group. So during his career, he has been involved in more than 300 hostage negotiations, including 270 as a lead negotiator. He has never lost any of them. I'm so excited for this conversation. So having had a successful career in law enforcement, they are now focusing their energy on something that they're very passionate about, which is giving younger people the opportunity to improve their communication skills. We are going to delve deep today and hopefully give you lots to talk about and lots to take away. Please welcome to the podcast, it's Troy. Troy, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on, Jack and Zach. And I really appreciate the opportunity to sit down with you guys and chop it up a little bit.
Thank you. I'm excited to dig deep into your mind and your mindset. So I guess we start our podcast the same way every time, Troy. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
Well, I'm just a man that had a storied career. You know, I spent my entire life working in law enforcement and having an opportunity to work with a bunch of individuals that have changed my life by seeing some of the things that they've accomplished and taking the opportunity to give that same opportunity to my family. And so I've been blessed, man. I can't even say anything else. That's who I am. I'm a Christian man. My family is a Christian family, and we enjoy serving, and that means others.
And 300 hostage negotiations, you never lost one. You must have a killer mindset. You must be bulletproof. What does that look like, Troy?
That's so funny because a lot of people say, because I have such a big family, I have 8 children, 40 grandchildren, and 9 great-grandchildren. I got a lot of practice. So, you know, when you're out there and you're sitting in the hot seat, having to understand the meaning or the reason behind the why behind the behavior of the individual that have taken somebody hostage, you have to pay attention. It's all about being a good listener and be all in and try to figure out the why behind the behavior. Most people try to go in and problem solve. Sometimes you just have to be a good listener, let that person vent, let them realize what they've done. And normally they'll negotiate against themselves and decide to give up.
So if we're looking at Troy in his law enforcement days and then Troy today, what are the skills and the attributes that have stayed the same throughout and you've always relied on?
Caring about other people, you know. When you get into a profession like law enforcement, most people get in because they want to help other people. And that hasn't changed. That hasn't changed from the time I joined law enforcement to what I'm doing now. Now I'm in the private sector and I give back. I have a program called Walk a Mile in My Shoes, where I take the community and make them the police. I take the police and make them the community. So each side can see how the other side see them. And then we have an open conversation. That way, both sides get to understand the perspective of the people that they're dealing with. And then we do fun activities like we'll do bowling, movie nights. We'll take over a top golf, a golf course and stuff. And the community and the police get to do that together. So each side can see how human we are and that, you know, we're all trying to accomplish the same objective, which is to be better community people.
That's amazing. What have you found from getting people to wear the shoes on the other side? So when people become the police or the police become the community, what are some of the big takeaways you found from doing that?
The biggest takeaway that I found is that each side realizes the other side is human, that, you know, they have difficult situations. You know, community, whenever you let somebody be the other side, show how they see you being treated. For example, when I make the community the police, the first thing they say is put your hands on the car, you know, and put your hands behind your back. And then the officers will say, why? And they say, because I said so. And the police will say, we don't talk like that. I said, yes, we do. And then when the police get to be the community, they go, oh, you want to kill another black man with a hoodie and you just want to hurt the community. And the community go, we don't talk like that. And I say, oh, yes, we do. And then both sides get a chance to see how the other side see them. And then it becomes funny because ultimately they'll say, hey, that officer reminded me of my uncle. Or they'll say that community member reminded me of my sister. And then they make them human. And that humanness is what helps make people understand that we all have to work together.
I love it. I've never heard of an idea like that before. I think that's amazing. I think probably something we should be adopting in the UK as well.
I'll send you guys some shirts.
That'd be amazing. What a good idea. So Troy, one of the reasons we were really excited to have you on, we're massive advocates of Black Swan Method. Our employees have to prove that they can implement certain skills from Never Split the Difference in order to pass probation when they come into a job role. So I wanted to get into a few different techniques and see what your thoughts were on how we're doing them, maybe tweak them a little bit. Could we start off with the accusation audit? Could you tell us what it is and where it's useful?
So you probably think that's going to be the hardest ones that you have to do. You may even think that we're crazy for even considering it. I know you don't want to be in a position where you feel like you're bad mouthing your own company. Those are accusations audits. Those are things, that's what we call preemptive labels. Getting out in front of the things that the other side may be thinking, whether it's true or not. When you can do that, you're starting to build empathy, tactical empathy. You're saying the things that they may be thinking before they've come out of their mouth. And if they're not thinking it, they're not going to start thinking it. Everybody says, oh, I can't say that. If I say that, then they're going to start thinking that. That's not how it works. When people say, I don't want you to think, that's when you start thinking it. But if you throw something out there that wasn't on their mind, they're going to say, no, I wasn't thinking that. And then they say, let's move on. So you're getting out in front of the things that you think might be an issue or a negative or the elephant in the room. You get out in front of it first. And when you do that, people are going to start to respect you more. They're going to say, hey, this person is an honest person. They're not trying to hide anything from me. And that's what you want in order to get the conversation going, is about trust and respect.
I noticed in your examples then, the delivery, there was a lot of space. You'd deliver the line, there'd be space, nice kind of low, calm tone. So what's key in the delivery to make sure it lands properly?
Yeah, when people start to use accusations audits in the beginning, because they feel like they're bad mouthing themselves or their company, they're going to try to rush through them. And the faster you go, the less likely the other side is going to believe you. Be slow, calm about it. You know, we call it the late night FM DJ. I know the younger generation don't know what that is, but the older generation to get it. And you want to have dynamic silence in between them. Every time you do one, you want to let it sit so that the other side can soak it in and listen to what you've said and make a determination if that's what they were thinking or not. If it is what they're thinking and they say, yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. Most people, when they first start accusations audits, they panic and they want to steer away from that. When in reality, they're giving you what we call a black swan. They're telling you this is the issue that we have to deal with in order to move on. So attack it head on.
Yeah, it's an amazing tech. I think maybe a week ago I had a client on a call and I thought he was mad at me. He just seemed something was off on the call. So I said, look, I'm getting the feeling this campaign's underperforming. We're not doing what you thought we would do. You feel like we've overpromised and underdelivered. And he stopped me and said, no, I've just had to put my dog down. But he maybe wouldn't have been forthcoming if we hadn't got there first. And then we got to kind of deal with how he was feeling and, you know, he felt heard. But initially there was a moment of, it was kind of frosty and I didn't know why. So yeah, it's a killer technique.
And you know, Zach, when you did that, you know, even if you get it wrong, they're going to correct you with the truth. So great use of skills, way to take the opportunity to try to determine if it was what you were thinking. And then he told you no. He says, no, that's not what it is. You know, I had to put my dog down and you went in a whole different direction. But he told you something that he probably had no intention of telling you that day. Hmm. So you gathered information and data, and then that took you down a path where you became more caring towards his situation. and you started letting him vent and get that off of his chest so that you can move into the conversation that you needed to move in. If his mind is not listening, willing to listen to you in the moment, half of his brain is offline because he's focused on what just happened to him in his world. How can you have a good conversation? How can you move the conversation to where you need it to be if you haven't let him get the things off of his chest that he need to get off of his chest first?
100%, 100%. So the next thing I wanted to talk about was the different personality types. So obviously there's different frames of belief around what types of personalities there are, how to navigate them. And I always think that the Black Swan method always has a nice tidy way of thinking about personality types that you're going to come across. So could you give us a bit of background on how you think about the different personalities we might deal with in a negotiation and maybe a bit about how to navigate each one?
Well, we talk about the three negotiator personality types, which are the assertive, the analyst, and the accommodator. And all three of them, there's nothing wrong with any personality. That's who you are. The problem is if you have an assertive tone when you're talking to somebody, two-thirds of the population are going to get offended by that. They're going to feel like, you know, you're being a bully or you're being aggressive. If you're dealing with another assertive, then that's okay. But what happens when you're dealing with the other 66% of the population? You want to have a tone that's more accommodating or pleasing when you're having the conversation. The analyst tone is what we call the late night FM DJ. That's when you want to get your point across. You want, this is something that you want people to remember. So you slow your cadence down. You let it sit more. You enunciate every word. And when you're doing that, the person automatically starts to focus in more because they're forced to have to listen. If you notice, a lot of times that late night FM DJ voice is a softer tone, is lower. So you almost have to lean in to hear it. And then you have the accommodator tone. That's where most people like to be at. That's where it's friendly, it's fun, it's non-threatening, and people feel comfortable in that tone. Some people think that the accommodator tone is like being a comedian or being a clown. That's not the case. It's just being more open and honest and laid back, you know, almost like you're talking to your best friend. So when you're dealing with the assertive, their personality type is that they want to feel respected. So when an assertive is talking, they want to make sure that they're getting their point across and you understand that. They definitely want to feel respected. And if they feel respected and heard and understood, then they're more willing to listen to you. So you know when you're dealing with an assertive, let them get out everything that they have to say, even if you don't agree with it. A great way to deal with an assertive is to summarize. Summarize the things that they said to let them know that you understood what they were saying. And when you get it, that's right, then it's your turn to talk. They're willing to listen to your side. If you're dealing with an analyst, an analyst is about data and information. You want to make sure that you've dotted your I's and you've crossed your T's. Don't try to play off of the cuff, you know, like most accommodators do. We don't do as much research. The analysts will do their research and they will have the information, and it's all about data. If you can show them through the data that what they're saying don't make sense, they'll respect that. But don't go and try to go off the cuff and just throw out numbers that you know are not true, because this is a waste of time for them. The accommodator is the one that want that relationship in the moment. An accommodator is going to talk about everything under the sun first. They're going to want to talk about their family, your family, you know, how's your dog doing? They want to know all of that stuff first before they get into the conversation. They're the hardest ones to negotiate with. Because if they feel like they don't have a relationship in the moment, they get offended. And when they get offended, they become determined to make it more difficult to get the negotiation done. If you have two accommodators, you're in trouble, unless one of them have the wherewithal to say, you know what, this is great conversation, let's get down to business, and then we can go back to talking about the other things. If you don't, they'll never get anything accomplished.
Wow. How obvious is it in terms of which one you're dealing with? Are there any tricks and, you know, I can figure it out in the first few minutes who I'm dealing with, or is it harder than that?
Well, everybody can exhibit all three personality types, I give the example. I know Sandy and them talk about the bear in the woods. So, Chris and Eric talk about on introductions. I like to talk about if you go to a social event. If you go to a social event, it's a great way to see what personality type you're dealing with so that you know for the future. You go to a social event and you see somebody floating around the room, going to every little group, introducing themselves. That's the accommodator. If you see somebody kind of standing off in the corner, like observing, being very calculated, that's your analyst. If you see somebody trying to wanting to have the majority of the room surrounding them and they're talking and they're holding court, they're going to be the loudest one. And normally they got their fists balled up and they're talking about how they just whooped somebody in the deal. That's your assertive personality type. Now, we can be all three at any given time, but we like to say when you get punched in the mouth, what is your default? Is it run, fight, or freeze?
So interesting.
Then once you know your personality type, you have to know yours and then know the personality type of the person that you're dealing with in order to have the best strategy on how to negotiate with them.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So I also wanted to talk about labeling. We love labeling and mislabeling. We use it all the time. I actually couldn't believe when I first read about it, I was sat in bed with my wife and I just thought, low stakes negotiation here. Let me use it on my wife and see if she notices what I'm doing. And I was amazed. It was like a Jedi mind trick. She didn't notice. And then in the business, whenever I teach people the technique, they say it wouldn't work, and then I label until they notice that I'm doing it. And sometimes it takes 5-10 minutes of doing it before anyone even notices. But for people who don't know what it is, what is labeling?
So labeling is another form of asking questions without actually asking questions. It seems like, it sounds like, it looks like, it feels like, or you seem, you sound, you look. You're not saying this is what it is, it's saying what you think it is. So you have different type of labels. You have an asking label. An asking label is with an upward inflection. So I would say, Zach, seems like you really enjoy doing these podcasts. I just hit you with a label and you could smile and you start talking about the podcast. And sounds like you have a fun audience. And you start talking about the audience, because it's easier for you to just respond than having a calibrated question. If you have a calibrated question, that's a thought shaping question, a what and how question. You have to think about it. A label just gives you the freedom to just speak out without having to give much thought, because you know what's in your head already. It's amazing how much information you get from a label versus asking a direct question. And when you can do that, I tell the story about using the label on an airplane. And I don't know how much time we have. If I could share this story, it'd take about a minute and a half.
Please.
Okay, yeah, so please do. We're coming back from a live event and I'm in Chicago and I get on this flight and I fly this airline called Southwest because it's open seating. You know, you don't get to pick your flight, your seat, but whoever gets on first get the best seat. And I'm a tall guy, so I'm usually the first or the second one on. So I sit in the emergency exit row with the extended leg room. And about 40 to 50 people in, this lady saw that the window seat was still available. And she runs down the aisle. She dives over my lap before I can get up to let her in. She sits down, pulls her tray table out, puts her laptop on. She turns and looks at me and she says, "I have a lot of work to do. I'm going to be busy." What was she telling me? Don't bother me. So this flight attendant standing between us, and as soon as we get up about 10,000 feet, she realizes that there's nobody sitting between us, and she looks over at me. She goes, "What do you do for a living?" And most people would start to talk and tell them, but we always say 75 to 80% of the conversation should be about the other side. So I took that opportunity to hit her with the label. It says, "Sounds like you have a reason for asking." And she said, "I do." She said, "You dress so nice. You got a cowboy hat on, a suit and tie, cowboy boots. And, you dress really nice." I said, she said, "Most people get on the plane. They look like they just got out of bed. They got flip flops on. They got their hair done. Look like they're still in their pajamas. And you are just dressed so nice." I said, "You're a very observant person. Sounds like you have an interesting job." And she said, I do, I'm a doctor. And she corrected me. She said, no, I mean, I'm a pediatrician. I have 5 kids, all girls. I said, sounds like your husband's going to have a time of his life. His hands are going to be full. She goes, yeah. She says, and my mom just moved here from Egypt. And she started telling me her life story in 30 minutes. And I just hit her with 3 labels. And throughout the conversation for 30 minutes, she had talked to me about herself. And then she said something that this is where my 20% came in. She says, if you ever get a chance, read this book called Never Split the Difference. She said, my husband read it. And he was in a group of doctors, 3 other doctors. It was a group of 4. He split off from them after he read Never Split the Difference, and his business is thriving. She goes, whatever you do, read that book. And that's when I smiled at her and I hit her with a no-oriented question. I said, would you be against me sharing with you what I do for a living? And she said, no, tell me. And I said, that book you're talking about, I'm one of the instructors and coaches. She said, you're lying. And she was so loud that people thought I was harassing her. And they turned around trying to take a video. They want to put me on TikTok, you know. And she opens up her computer. She pulls up the Black Swan group and she finds me. And she says, you're Troy Smith. And she gets all excited. So the people in the front turn around and the ones in the back started, you know, evidently they pulled me up. And there's this guy from Ohio State University in 2006 won the Heisman named Troy Smith. So they thought that might be me because I look like a football player. So we finished the conversation, the plane lands, and we get off the flight, and everybody's trying to take pictures from the back. And she's walking away, and she says, can I call my husband and tell him that I'm set with you? And I said, yeah, I'll talk to him for a few minutes. I said, hey, if you ever get a chance to come to a live event, I would love to meet you. Come up and introduce yourself. And I said, I have to go. And she, as I'm walking away, she turned around. She says, Troy. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, I didn't learn anything about you. And I smiled. That's what a great label will do for you and using the Black Swan skills. It was all about her. And just because of that, I became likable.
Wow. What an amazing story. You shouldn't even realize. That's amazing. One thing that sometimes we get feedback on when new people are trying this for the first time, they do, you've probably got a better way of saying this, but it's almost like a surface level label. So someone might talk about how frustrating something is, and then the label would be, oh, that sounds frustrating. And it's almost the person goes, well, yeah, I just said it was. And it doesn't really land in the right way. So for those people who do that and then think it doesn't work, where are they going wrong?
So like you said, they're surface labels, and usually that's somebody's emotions. You get to see, that's the easiest time to use a label like that, or a surface level label. You seem angry. Sounds like you're frustrated. And they go, yeah, I just told you I was frustrated. You know, it's a good label to start with, but it says you want to go deeper. We talk about the surface level, and then we talk about the latent dynamics going deeper below the surface. If you think about it like an iceberg, you can see the top of the iceberg, but below the surface, it's a whole lot bigger. And that's what you want to do with the label. So when somebody says you seem frustrated, and they go, yeah, I just told you I was frustrated. To go deeper with that, when you would say you seem frustrated when, in whatever the situation you think it might be, whenever you get out of your boss's office and he's just raked you over the coals. And they go, yeah, you know, they think that I can't do my job, and they'll give you more information. So if you go a little deeper to the why behind the behavior, you know, they just came out of their boss's office and their face is down, and you go, you seem frustrated. And they go, yeah, I am frustrated. But if you say you seem frustrated when the boss don't recognize how hard you're working, and they'll tell you, yes, all of a sudden they've just found a friend, somebody who understands it, who gets what they're going through. Versus saying, I understand. You just demonstrated that you understand. And you verbalized it.
Amazing. I remember when I started this business in the early days, it was all cold calling people to try and get meetings in the diary. And I was talking to a guy on the phone, and he was saying, he was kind of talking himself in and out of sitting down with a meeting. So he was like, oh, maybe we should, maybe we shouldn't. And I just took a step back and said, sounds like you're conflicted. And the next thing, he was talking himself into why he needed to do it, but I didn't talk him into it. He was telling himself all the reasons why. No, no, I'm not conflicted. We need to do something. And then suddenly he was talking himself into it. And yeah, it's an amazing tool. I think the other example I'd give as well, in my own life, I've got, you mentioned how many children you've got. I'm not as many as you. I've got four boys. And sometimes when they finish school and they've had a bad day, I'd go into that dad mode of trying to like solve the problem for them. As soon as I learned about labeling and I could say, oh, it sounds like you've had a really tough day. You know, you can see the shoulders come down. Yeah, it was really tough and it was hard. They open up more. Whereas before I was doing that male thing of kind of trying to solve the problem straight away. Does that make sense? You know what I'm trying to say?
Oh, I know exactly what you're trying to say. That's what most people do. They, in anytime somebody comes to you with a dilemma or some type of issue, right away, our first instinct is to try to solve their problem instead of finding out what happened, what have they done that didn't work, what, you know, what can they do? And when you do that for people, they seem to solve their own problems and they feel good about that. So it's easier when you stop saying, well, this is what you need to do versus sounds like you have a plan. And yeah, you know, dad, you know, maybe tomorrow when I go to school, I'm going to go and have a talk with that individual that you know, we were at odds with and see if there's something we can do to fix it. Because I really like them as a friend. And you'll be amazed that they feel good. They're like, man, they'll like talking to you because you really helped them solve their problem. We talk about the Socratic method. You know, Socrates used to answer a question with a question to get people to solve their own problems. And labels have a way of doing that just by saying it seems like, it sounds like, it looks like, it feels like.
Wow. So that's, we use something similar in terms of Socratic questioning. If I said this, what would you say? Mm-hmm. But we could potentially skip all that by using a label.
Right. So one of the things we talk about, if I, now you made it about you. We said 75 to 80% of the conversation should be about the other side. So we go, it seems like you, or it seems like this. And now if it's not what it is, they'll correct you. That was one of the things you talked about earlier about the mislabel. And it doesn't have to be intentional. If you get it wrong, people feel good about correcting you. It tastes good coming out of their mouth to correct you, to let you know that they're smart, that you're not all knowing. The problem with people in the world is most people don't like that. They want to get back at them the next chance they get, like, oh, you're not so smart. And it becomes like a competition. You just have to put your feelings aside and realize that they just gave you gold. They gave you a black swan. They gave you information that they probably had no intention of giving you. And the good thing about correcting you, when they correct you with the truth. They don't correct you with a lie.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, amazing. You got my the wheels are in motion. I'm taking away over here. Another thing that, I mean, you'll notice it, I notice it as well. Salespeople have got this habit of, they ask a question, they hear an answer, and they go, okay, great. And they move on to the next question. So they kind of just move across the question rather than going deeper. But that okay, great, or brilliant, sounds good. And then they just move into the next question. They often leave the other side not feeling heard. And active listening is one of those things that gets bandied around. But in reality, how can we show people that we're listening? We've talked about labeling. What else can we do to show the other side we've listened and we've heard what they've said?
Mirrors and summaries. You know, if you mirror something that somebody said, the last one to three words that somebody said, it just came out of their mouth. And so when you mirror it, and a lot of people say they don't like to mirror because they think that it sounds like they're being a copycat. You say something and I'd mirror the last one to three words and you're like, okay, he's getting it. And you'll keep on talking. We tend to think that we're doing a bad thing. So we negotiate against ourselves from using a mirror when it's a tool that's a great tool to have when you don't have anything else to use in the moment. One of the things about labels is, early on, people are so consumed with trying to get a label out that they're not paying attention to what's being said. And when you're doing a label right, it goes back to what you were saying about the salesperson. They'll say, great. They're not really paying attention. if they labeled something that you said, you would know that they're paying attention without them saying it, and then the conversation could flow even more. When you're doing a mirror, you hit them with the last one to three words, and if you don't get it, you need more information, you'll say, a mirror with the upward inflection, and they'll go, yeah, a mirror. Or you, if you want to let them know that you got it, you go, a mirror. And they go, yeah. So they know that it's okay to move on. The other great thing is a summary. I love summaries. Summaries will help you get better at listening. When you learn to listen better, you can summarize the things that the person said. So far, you've told me. You notice that what I said, so far you told me. I didn't say what I'm hearing is, because remember what I'm hearing. So far you've told me is about them. So far you've told me that you have four boys, that you've used labels on your wife and they worked, that you love working, love doing these podcasts, that you were having to deal with salespeople in the past. And as a result, you enjoy having these interviews. And then he's sitting there nodding your head. Yes, that's right. I've just said the things that you...
best friends now after you've
yes. Just said the things that mattered to you. And I heard you. I didn't say I understand. I demonstrated understanding. And if there's something that you said that I didn't get yet, you'll say it. You know, but you forgot about this. And then I understand that that was of importance to you.
Do you ever get, I don't know how to word this, but when you're summarizing, would you ever get something wrong on purpose to get the other side to go deeper? If there was kind of, if they were vague and, or there was no emotion there, or you didn't really, would you ever be tactical in how you'd apply that?
You can. It's like I said, that's mislabeling. You know, you can do it intentionally or you can do it. It can be accidental that you just didn't know. Either way, they're going to respond unless you continue to do it like a lie detector test. You know, you do it too many times and they feel like, man, this person's not even listening to me. And that's one of the problems about any of the skills that we have is some people will overuse the skills. They'll fall so in love with it that they'll label 15 times when they don't have to. Or they'll mislabel intentionally 10 times and they don't have to. And Derek Gaughan, I don't know if you talked to him yet. He always said that it's like a soup. You know, when you're making a soup, you have to put the right amount of seasoning in. You put the right ingredients in. You don't put too much of one, too little of another. As you start to practice these skills and get better at them, you will find yourself using the right skill in the right moment automatically. It takes 64 to 67 reps just to start to get proficient at understanding these skills. That's why we always tell people, go out there and get low stakes practice. You did it when you were with your wife. And I always say that's dealing with your wife is high stakes practice and family in reality because they know how you talk. You know, they know how you talk and they're like, you know, why are you talking like this? Is this not how you talk? So you take the opportunity to tell them up front, say, hey, listen, I'm going through this program. It's called the Black Swan Group. And we're talking about the active listening skills and, you know, what we call the negotiation 9 skills. So I need to get my reps in. I need your help. And you'll be so amazed that your family will feel like they're helping you in your career, that they're a part of helping you. And they feel good about that because they always want their dad to succeed. They always want their husband to succeed. Now they're a part of it. They're not feeling excluded. The problem with it is that when you don't use a skill, they're going to tell you. You're going to want to say, hey, you know, you're having a bad day. They're going to say, Dad, you're supposed to say you seem like you're having a bad day. But you'll realize even by them doing that, they're helping you. And then you'll sit back and you'll hear them in a conversation with somebody else and they'll be using the skills. So it becomes a family adventure and everybody's a part of it and they're going to feel good that they're helping you get better.
Amazing. So it feels like if you were looking to get good at this, you could get your family involved, you could get your friends involved, and every part of your life when you're communicating with people could make you better at this if you just got everyone involved.
Definitely. It's not a good thing to wait until you're in the middle of a serious negotiation, when a high stakes negotiation, to try to pull out these skills. You want to do it on a daily basis so it becomes natural to you. It becomes commonplace. It sounds natural. It doesn't sound rehearsed. It doesn't sound hard. You know, just have the conversation. And that's, we tell people all the time, that's all this is having a difficult conversation. Have it, relax, get in the moment and listen to what the other side is saying and base your labels and mirrors and stuff off of what's coming out of their mouth.
Amazing. So the last one I wanted to talk about was no orientated questions. Mm-hmm. So what are they? I suppose more importantly, why do they work?
People are beat over the head with yes questions all the time. If you go to a car dealership, you walk on the lot, they look at you, they start sizing you up. They go, is he looking for a van or is he a sports car kind of guy? What kind of guy is he? And then they'll ask, you know, hey, what kind of car you have in mind? You say, well, you know, I'm looking for a sports car. And they go, good, I have the perfect sports car for you right away. They want to give you the keys. They want to get you in the car. And they want to tell you, you like that nice leather, don't you? And you go, yeah. You go, oh, the way it smells, just smells so good, doesn't it? And you, yeah. And they go, oh, go ahead, step on that gas, feel the power, feel all that muscle between your legs. And you're getting excited. And they go, you see how fast it accelerates? And you're like, yeah. As soon as they get you out of the car, they go, come on, let's go in here and get the paperwork done. And you go, whoa, 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 whoa. Not yet. They hit you with so many yeses that they beat you over the head with yes momentum. We like to use no as yes. So if I'm talking to you, Zach, and I say, Zach, would you be against me sharing a story with you? And you're like, no, Troy, that's a yes. Yes is commitment. No is protection. We give you the ability to have protection so you feel comfortable with saying yes by saying no.
Amazing. And we found that when we're doing sales calls and we hit the point where, and I used to, I was bad for this, when we'd hit a point where you would go for a closing of like the meeting or the next step, going for a, let's put some time aside, let's do a demo, all that salesy nonsense, you know, you get that reactance, that bias kicks in. People say, whoa, whoa, hold on, I feel like I'm being persuaded. To use your point, we found that when you say, would it be ridiculous to put some time aside, the response is totally different. No pressure, people feel much warmer about sitting down with you. It's very strange that it works immediately. And people don't feel as strongly like it, almost like it's not a sales conversation.
Right.
It's just amazing, amazing. We base our whole process off that. Everything is about going for no.
Yeah, because growing up all your life, you've been hit with the yes, and you know at the end, it's just like telling a story. At the end of the story, they're looking for a yes. You've been conditioned by that. So when your mind is saying, oh, they get ready to ask me something difficult, and you hit them with the, how difficult of a position would I put you in? Or would you be against? Or is it ridiculous? And they're like, their brain didn't hear what they thought they were going to hear. So right away, they're like, no, that's not a problem at all. Let me look on my calendar. They're excited about it.
Yeah, exactly. Like I say, a lot of this stuff feels like it's a cheat code. So the last thing I wanted to ask is, have you got any games or routines or practice people can do at home or with their teams to get used to doing this in a low stakes environment?
I do it everywhere I go. Everywhere I go, I'm either listening to somebody's conversation and seeing if they did a yes oriented question, or if they actually used the label and didn't know they were using the label. When I'm watching TV, if I hear a label, I go, man, they just did a label. You know, everywhere I go, I listen for what people are talking about, and I try to remember as much as I can. So I make it a game for me all the time so that when it really matters, I'm paying attention. It's anybody you come in contact with, yes, there's an opportunity to use one of our skills.
Beautiful. Troy, if people are listening to this and they think, right, I want to learn more, I want to find out more about Troy, I want to find out more about Black Swan, where would you recommend they start?
They can go on YouTube. There's a YouTube channel. They can pull up the Black Swan LTD and look at some of the stuff that we have offering. You know, we have coaching sessions. We have live events. We have a lot of stuff on YouTube that give them a taste of what the skills are about. You know, it's amazing for a company to be as successful as it is. They give away a lot of stuff and they're confident in it because they know it works. And one of the things I always talk about, and I was telling Jack earlier before we came on the set, one of the things that I encourage people to do is caviar. This program we call Caviar is, what is your mindset before you have the negotiations?
Go on.
So think about it. When you got up this morning and you have to, maybe the wife was saying, hey, can you take the kids to daycare? Or can you make lunch for the kids? Can you do this? Can you do that? Then, you know, you have a meeting and you get in your car and your car won't start. Or you get in traffic and normally traffic is light and all of a sudden there's an accident and it's backed up. And now you're pressed for time. You're trying to get to where you have to go. So you're building all this stress up on yourself. And then when you get in that meeting, half of your brain is offline because you're thinking about all the things that's going on in your world. You haven't had a chance to vent, to get that off of your mind so that you can be all in the conversation that you're having in the moment. So your mindset is not right. And if half of your brain is offline, you're not paying attention. So we talk about caviar, being curious, not judgmental. When you go into the conversation, you're listening to the other side. Are you being curious or are you being judgmental about what they're saying? What is the why behind the behavior? Why are they saying it? And normally, if you're not paying attention to the other side, at some point, you're going to get attacked. You have to accept the fact that at some point, you're going to get attacked. And people are going to attack you for one of three reasons. One, they don't think you're listening. If you're messing with your cell phone or texting while somebody's talking to you, they know you're not all in. You know, if they're talking to you and you keep, but you're not paying attention and they've asked you a question and they realize that you're not even dialed in, they're going to get upset. The other reason is because they're under a lot of pressure to get it right. If you're dealing with somebody, especially in a business environment, and y'all have been working on a contract or a deal for a while, and they're under a lot of pressure from their side to make sure they get it right. And so now they're starting to add pressure to you because they got a deadline. The third time that the people are going to attack you is because they're manipulative. It's worked in the past, so why wouldn't they continue to do it? If I could put enough pressure on you to make you say and do something that you normally wouldn't do, I've won. And it's worked for me in the past, so why wouldn't I do it again? Instead of having a conversation, I'm going to try to bully you and intimidate you. So those are the three things that cause somebody to attack you. And the attack normally lasts no longer than 45 seconds to a minute. So you just have to be calm and sit in your seat and you have to ask yourself, why are they attacking me? That's when you get curious. You want to know the why behind the behavior. Or if you start to get upset, you want to label yourself. It seems like I'm getting upset, to calm you down because your amygdala is being affected. The third thing you want to do is vent and caviar. Find somebody that you trust and lay out everything on the table before you have to go into that difficult conversation. Tell them about what's going on in your world. Get it out in the open. If there's nobody there to do that with, one of the things I used to do is I'd write it down on a piece of paper. Everything that was going on that irritated me that morning or that was going on in my world that was going to keep me from paying attention at the highest level to the counterpart, I'd write it down and then I'd ball it up. And that way it was no longer an issue. And then you could sit down in that conversation and be a better listener.
So it sounds like you need to have a moment to get your emotions. I really like that, writing things down that might be bothering you before you jump in. But it also sounds like if they sneak into a conversation, maybe someone gets your back up or says the wrong thing in a negotiation, you should have a secondary thought that says, don't trust your emotions.
You get curious about yourself. You label yourself. Seems like I'm getting upset. And then you go back to curiosity, the why behind the behavior. Why am I getting upset? Is he what he's saying true? Or am I feeling attacked? Or, you know, what is the why behind the behavior? And it starts to clear your brain, because once your amygdala gets attacked, you can't think clearly. It happens to everybody. And when you can't think clearly, the harder you try, the harder it gets. And so you're not even paying attention. Then you get into defense mode. And people will say, you know, what do you think about that? I don't like it. And you're snapping at the other person, or you're attacking back because you feel like that's your mechanism to recover from what's going on. And in reality, you have to ask yourself, why am I getting upset?
Yeah.
And get curious again.
If someone said I had green hair, I wouldn't get upset. But there's probably some truth in what someone said. That's some soul searching to do there. I love that. Right, Troy, we've taken a lot of your time. I really, really appreciate it. I could probably talk to you all day about this stuff. So I really appreciate you taking the time out. I've learned a lot. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us.
Zach, I appreciate it. Jack, I appreciate it. Man, you guys sound like you have an awesome podcast, and you're doing some great things over there across the pond, and we appreciate that. You have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Troy.